Greetings, this is Tyler McFeeters with your pantograph dated January 3rd, Friday, 2025. We'll begin today's reading with the front page with an article headlined, FBI says driver in New Orleans rampage acted alone, was 100% inspired by Islamic State group. Article by Eric Tucker, Jim Mustaine, Kevin McGill, and Jack Brooke of the Associated Press. New Orleans. The U.S. Army veteran who drove a pickup truck into a crowd of New Year's revelers acted alone, the FBI said Thursday, reversing its position from a day earlier that he likely worked with others in the deadly attack that officials said was inspired by the Islamic State group. The FBI also revealed that the driver, Shamsuddin Jabbar, a U.S. citizen from Texas, posted five videos on his Facebook account in the hours before the attack, in which he proclaimed his support for the militant group and previewed the violence that he would soon unleash in the city's famed French Quarter district. This was an act of terrorism. It was premeditated and an evil act, said Christopher Raya, R-A-I-A, the deputy assistant director of the FBI's counterterrorism division, calling Jabbar 100% inspired by the Islamic State. The attack killed 14 revelers, along with Jabbar, who was fatally shot in a firefight with police after steering his speeding truck around a barricade and plowing into the crowd. It was the deadliest IS-inspired assault on U.S. soil in years, laying bare what federal officials have warned is a resurgent international terrorism threat, and coming as the FBI and other agencies brace for dramatic leadership upheaval and likely policy changes after President-elect Donald Trump's administration takes office. Seeking to assuage concerns about any broader plots, Raya stressed that there was no indication of a connection between the New Orleans attack and the explosion Wednesday of a Tesla Cybertruck filled with explosives outside Trump's Las Vegas hotel. The person inside that truck, a decorated U.S. Army Green Beret, sustained a gunshot wound to the head before the explosion, and a handgun was found at his feet inside the charred vehicle, authorities said Thursday. The FBI continued to hunt for clues about the 42-year-old Jabbar, but said that a day into its investigation, it was now confident that he was not aided by anyone else in the attack, which killed an 18-year-old aspiring nurse, a single mother, a father of two, and a former Princeton University football star, among others. Officials have concluded that none of the individuals seen in surveillance video standing near an improvised explosive device that Jabbar placed in a cooler along the city's Bourbon Street where the attack occurred were involved in any way, though investigators do want to speak with them as witnesses, Raya said. The device in the cooler and another explosive device were rendered safe at the scene. Others were determined to be non-functional. And investigators were also trying to understand more about Jabbar's path to radicalization, which they say culminated with him picking up a rented truck in Houston on December 30th and driving it to New Orleans the following night. The FBI recovered a black Islamic State flag from his rented pickup and reviewed five videos posted to Facebook, including one in which he said he originally planned to harm his family and friends, but was concerned that news headlines would not focus on the war between the believers and the disbelievers, Raya said. He also left a last will and testament, the FBI said. Jabbar joined the Army in 2007, serving on active duty in human resources and information technology, and deploying to Afghanistan from 2009 to 2010, the service said. He transferred to the Army Reserve in 2015 and left in 2020 with the rank of Staff Sergeant. Abdur Rahim Jabbar, Jabbar's younger brother, told the Associated Press on Thursday that it doesn't feel real that his brother could have done this. I never would have thought it'd be him, he said. It's completely unlike him. He said that his brother had been isolated in the last few years, but that he had also been in touch with him, and he didn't see any signs of radicalization. It's completely contradictory to who he was and how his family and his friends knew him, he said. In New Orleans on Thursday, a still-reeling city inched back towards normal operations. Authorities finished processing the scene early in the morning, removing the last of the bodies, and Bourbon Street, famous worldwide for music, open-air drinking, and festive vibes, reopened for business by early afternoon. The Sugar Bowl college football game between Notre Dame and Georgia, initially set for Wednesday night and postponed by a day in the interest of national security, was still on for Thursday. The city also planned to host the Super Bowl next month. New Orleans is not only ready for game day today, but we're ready to continue to host large-scale events in our city because we are built to host at every single turn, New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell said. The next story is about the Bloomington Bison, a hockey story. Bloomington Bison, shorthanded after goalie call-ups, find their emergency backup in-house out of Bloomington. This story is by D. Jack Alkire, A-L-K-I-R-E. In sports, especially at the pro level, it's imperative to have contingency plans. Professional hockey rules require a substitute goalie to be ready, on the bench, dressed in full gear, to take the place of the goalie guarding the net if he is hurt or otherwise removed from play. The Bloomington Bison have had four goaltenders on the roster at various times since their season began in October. The two who have spent the most time on the team, Mark Sinclair and Hugo Olas, were called up in the past week to the higher-level American Hockey League, one rung below the NHL. Team leaders view this as a good problem to have because it signals the talent being fostered here. But it also meant that at Thursday's practice and heading into Friday night's home game against the Cincinnati Cyclones, Bloomington had just one goalie available, Yaniv Peretz, who was recently reassigned to Bloomington from the Chicago Wolves. That meant the Bison found themselves in need of an emergency backup goalie, or E-Bug. They didn't need to look far. Enter Jason Proot, P-R-O-O-T, ticket sales representative for the Bison, who has played his whole life, most recently as goalie for the Ice Hockey Club of Florida State University from 2022 to 2024. I have an older brother, so there were times when I would get called up to his older team, Proot said after Thursday's practice. So in that sense, I've had E-Bug stuff before on the way smaller scale. Emergency backups are not unheard of even at the highest levels. Chicago Blackhawks fans may remember the iconic 2018 performance of Scott Foster, an Oak Park accountant who served as an emergency backup and was ultimately put into the net against the Winnipeg Jets. Foster, then 36, blocked seven shots to help the team win 6-2. Goalie substitutions are more common in the ECHL, a league equivalent to baseball's 2A level, where rosters change often to accommodate players' development and the needs of various AHL and NHL affiliate teams. Teams at this level call on emergency backups quite a bit, probably more often than you would think, said Bison team captain Eddie Matsushima. Matsushima. It happens quite a bit, obviously, with the movement from the NHL and the AHL, and with the number of goalies and how quickly they move between levels. It's just something that we've dealt with quite a bit, he said. Proot, 22, grew up in New Jersey playing hockey and following the New York Rangers, the Bison's NHL affiliate. He graduated from FSU in 2024 with a degree in sports management, and even though he has played hockey for 15 years, Thursday's practice matched the highest level Proot has ever seen, having performed as E-Bug for the Kalamazoo Wings earlier this season. I joke around with a lot of my buddies and my coworkers, like I was never good enough to actually crack a roster, so I just said, hey, go work for a team and wait for a call, he said. Most recently, the Bison sent goalies Sinclair to the AHL Belleville Senators and Olas to the Hartford Wolfpack. I'm really happy and proud of Mark Sinclair, said Bison head coach and general manager Philip Barsky, B-A-R-S-K-I, after Thursday's practice. That's what created the situation. So when Olas got the call on Wednesday to Hartford, Connecticut, Barsky trusted assistant coach Jesse Messier, M-E-S-S-I-E-R, to draft their e-bug, which he found in a sleeping prout. I actually woke up from a nap when I saw a text from Jesse Messier, Prout said, and he was like, hey, can you come by tomorrow? It sounds way simpler than it should be, but yeah, it was just a quick text, and here I am. Enthusiasm like that, particularly from front office staff, is appreciated, Barsky said. Prout's got a great energy level about him. The added bonus that he can also play goalie is pretty remarkable and pretty special, Barsky said. But Prout also has a special connection to fans as well, said Andy Zilch, Z-I-L-C-H, Director of Media Relations and Broadcasting for the team, making his e-bug status more unique. Fans know him personally because he helps them get their seats, Zilch said, and he's here skating. Like, I think that's an awesome thing on its own. Even though his gear was personal and well-worn instead of official Bison gear, save a practice sweater, Prout said he felt welcomed by the team. They make it really easy because they're all really friendly, he said. They all come up and introduce themselves. It's important for the locker room to be welcoming and supportive of an e-bug, Matsushima said. Obviously, we need a goalie. It could be for a day, it could be for a week, and especially as a guy coming in emergency backup, I mean, he understands he's emergency backup, and to have him feel welcome is really an important part of our team culture, Matsushima said. During practice, Prout blocked several shots. To be honest, I thought he made a couple of really nice saves out there, so I was happy for him, Barsky said. Inevitably, though, some players did score, and when they did, Prout appeared visibly upset, striking the handle of his stick on the ice. I never want to let a goal in, no matter what level I'm at, Prout said after practice. I know they're professional athletes, and I just sell tickets for the team, but I mean, I always want to make that stop, no matter what. Matsushima, who just celebrated his 300th professional game, said he appreciates that attitude. I've had e-bugs in the past on different teams, where they get scored on, and they're kind of laughing and having a good out time there, having a good time out there, which is fine. But it's not the attitude we want for our team, the team captain said. Because, you know, if something does happen and he has to go in, we want somebody that's really ready to really battle and get after it. So to see that, to hear that, it's awesome. Next story is in the business and local business section. Couple opening Dream Bookstore in Lexington. Article by Brendan Dennison. A new bookstore is seeking to muster readers, gamers, and a community spirit in downtown Lexington. The world is so fast, and I just want people to be able to come in here and slow down, said the store's co-owner, Jamie Hand, H-A-N-D. Hand graduated from Illinois State University, where she met her husband, Andy Hand, while they both studied English. In an interview with the Pantograph, both detailed their business plans to sell new, mostly contemporary books out of a 520 square foot of retail space at 316 West Main Street in Lexington. Reading, writing, it's always been a big part of our life, said Andy Hand. When you're book nerds like we are, that's kind of always on your bucket list. It's a dream, added Jamie Hand. The couple named the new business Emerald and Amethyst Books, referring to birthstones that correlate to the birth months of their two boys, a fifth grader and a seventh grader. They expect the business to have a grand opening in January. The floor plan includes an espresso bar. As of Sunday, Jamie Hand said their appliances were ordered and will need to be installed. They plan to pick up shelving Monday. Andy Hand, 45, said their elevator pitch is that the store will be like the Scholastic Book Fair for adults. Jamie Hand, 38, said she recently finished a master's degree from the Geis College of Business at the University of Illinois, which got her thinking about what they could do as entrepreneurs. As much as we want books, we know not everyone is a big reader, so we felt it was important to offer other things, she said. So the store will have books, as well as games and gifts, and will serve coffee. Jamie Han said gift items will be suited for literary or gamer types, and they are working with Common Grounds in Gridley to provide baked treats. Jamie Han said she wants to create a place where people can enjoy a topic that interests them, either through a book or a game, or enjoy a drink or snack that makes them feel happy and comfortable. Their coffee will come from Gobena Coffee in El Paso, she said, noting they were drawn to the brand because it raises funds for orphanages all over the world. Jamie Han said they plan to carry 400 unique book titles at the start, and while they may not have works by local authors at first, they are looking to carry them in the future. Their stock will include contemporary works of fiction, plus some classics and memoirs. Andy Hand said that they will have speculative fiction genres like science fiction, fantasy, and horror. There will be sections for children and young adults, added Jamie Hand. They also said they're hearing from future customers that mystery and thriller are two big genres that people love the most right now. Romance is also a huge seller, she continued, so they're planning for a big romance section. There's actually a huge push for romance-only indie bookstores. That's popping up everywhere because people just want to read romance these days, she said. Andy Hand noted another huge market is when romance crosses over into genres like fantasy, using works by Sarah J. Maas as an example. They call it romantasy, said Jamie Hand. The Hands moved from Bloomington to Lexington in 2009, and Andy said it's nice to have a small town feel. It's a community where they can walk to the grocery store while living within a 15-minute drive of Bloomington. Jamie Han said they also walk their kids to the library and to get ice cream. Andy Hand has a master's degree in composition from ISU and is also co-owner of Limitless Adventure. In that role, he said he writes adventure books in the Dungeons & Dragons universe as a third-party publisher, as well as board games and card games. His work is already for sale at Red Raccoon Games in Bloomington, and the Hands plan to devote a section for Limitless Adventures at Emerald & Amethyst. Jamie Hand said they won't pretend their books are going to be cheaper than what's on Amazon. We want to curate a space that serves the community in a special way, as opposed to Amazon's very anonymous, she said. Andy Hand said guests will be welcome to bring a laptop, sit on a couch, and enjoy a drink. They're looking to give a space for gamers to spread out their board games. It's all about fostering a sense of community first, and then when you get people and you build this community, then people want to support you. This next story is from the government and politics section. Hemp business owner sues over what he calls illegal raid as officials in several Illinois towns consider bans. Story by Robert McCoppin from the Chicago Tribune. A raid and criminal charges against a suburban smoke shop owner have ignited a dispute over enforcement of hemp laws, with the store owner filing a lawsuit claiming improper arrest, all while officials in several towns consider bans and Illinois legislators debate new hemp regulations. Increasingly, the broader controversy is prompting cities and villages to ban hemp, while state lawmakers are considering regulations that hemp business operators say would put many of them out of business. One case in particular has boiled down the quarrel to its most hotly disputed points of contention. In East Dundee, D-U-N-D-E, about an hour's drive northwest of downtown Chicago, police in August raided a hemp store called The Smokehouse. They confiscated the store's inventory and arrested manager Bilal Husseini, H-U-S-S-A-I-N-I, and I. They let him go a few hours later, but in November, after sending the products away to be tested, they charged him with misdemeanor possession and felony manufacture or delivery of cannabis. On Christmas Eve, Husseini's attorney filed suit against the village, several police officers involved in the raid, and Police Chief Joshua Fordyce, Fordyce. Husseini's mother, who owns the store, and an employee were also named as plaintiffs. It didn't make any sense to me why they did this, Husseini said. It's completely legal to sell. They're trying to frame me. Hemp was legalized by the 2018 federal Farm Bill that defined it as the cannabis plant and all derivatives that have less than 0.3% Delta-9 THC, the component of marijuana that gets users stoned. The primary intent was to allow non-psychoactive products like CBD. But producers found ways to synthetically derive other cannabinoids, such as Delta-8 THC, Delta-10 THC, and THC-0, that do get users high. That has led to a nationwide explosion of shops that sell hemp products, including gas stations and convenience stores. Unlike state-licensed cannabis dispensaries, hemp products generally are not required to undergo testing to verify potency and purity. They have no age restriction, and in some cases, tests have shown that they can't contain impurities and Delta-9 THC. But Husseini said he showed police certificates of analysis that all his products were tested to stay below the legal Delta-9 THC threshold. The gas chromatography lab test the police use, he said, is flawed because it heats up the plant material and turns benign THCA, a precursor of THC, into psychoactive THC. As a result, the suit alleges constitutional violations and intentional infliction of emotional distress, stating that Husseini was subjected to unlawful arrest and detention based on fabricated and manipulated evidence. Police did not respond immediately to requests for comment. At a village board meeting in November, Chief Fordyce told trustees the products tested well above the limit for THC. He asked the board to consider banning the sale of all hemp products in the village, a proposal supported by village president Jeff Lynam, L-Y-N-A-M. Trustee Scott Kunze, K-U-N-Z-E, opposed the ban, saying, "I don't think it works. It causes more unintended problems than it solves." The test the police used has been the gold standard for such analysis, and THC should be included as part of total THC, as federal law enforcement traditionally has done, said Jeff Rawson, founder of the nonprofit Institute of Cannabis Science. He considers arguments to the contrary willful denial and disinformation by people trying to capitalize on an unregulated loophole. But, he conceded, federal law does not make testing standards as clear as it should have. From a legal standpoint, judges in at least two federal districts have ruled that such testing alters the evidence in the case. Other tests can differentiate between Delta-9 THC and other cannabinoids. Elsewhere, after being sued, authorities in Texas and Tennessee have agreed to pay $80,000 and $735,000, respectively, to settle lawsuits alleging illegal seizure of hemp products, with more litigation pending in other cases. In Illinois, some suburbs are trying to avoid the conflict altogether. Antioch, Des Plaines, Elk Grove Village, Highland Park, Lake Zurich, Tinley Park, Orland Park, Waukegan, and Wheeling have outlawed or limited the sale of hemp products. Several states, including Indiana and Tennessee, have banned or limited hemp products, though such measures often are challenged in court. Last year, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration issued a warning that Delta H-THC products have not been evaluated or approved for safe use in any context. Illinois' annual cannabis report found that there's been a spike in the sale of high THCA hemp flower. Although the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration considers THCA a controlled substance, the State Hemp Act does not address it, and police often struggle to convince prosecutors to go after hemp products above the legal limit because of federal law. The issue may ultimately be decided at a higher level. While Congress has failed to clarify the Farm Bill, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker supports enacting a law to license, tax, and regulate hemp. The measure passed the State Senate almost unanimously and may be considered by the House in the first week of this year. In November, lawmakers approved allowing the Illinois Department of Agriculture to tighten its regulations on hemp. The Illinois Hemp Business Association protested that such changes unlawfully favor huge licensed cannabis companies and said it may mount a legal challenge. The association warned that the proposed new law would effectively ban even non-psychoactive components like CBD. At the smokehouse, police eventually returned most of the confiscated inventory, Husseini said, but the seizure hurt his business and prevented some customers with medical issues from getting their products. Husseini's family started the business at the now defunct nearby Spring Hill Mall before moving to Elgin, where Husseini said city officials and police were very supportive and helpful investigating break-ins. The store relocated in 2023 to East Dundee, across the street from Santa's Village. The shop is known for pet parrots that fly about freely. Husseini said he supports testing, labeling, and taxing hemp products, saying, "Our commitment has always been to serve our community responsibly." The next is the day's Flick Fact: how a George W. Bush laugh-out-loud moment about normal led to a book title. The question is, a 2004 New York Times bestseller, 10 Minutes from Normal, is the story by author, presidential counselor Karen Hughes, Hughes, about, among other topics, the 2000 presidential campaign of eventual winner George W. Bush. How did the book get its title? The answer: on an Across America campaign train in 2000, when readying to make a stop in Illinois, the conductor said, "Ladies and gentlemen, we're 10 minutes from normal. 10 minutes from normal." That was an announcement Hughes and Bush found so humorous, Hughes loudly announced to the train, "If I ever do a book, that will be the title." And the rest is history. On this day and 100 years ago, lineman aid Bloomington business. January 3, 1925, Bloomington banks, hotels, restaurants, and many retail stores have reason to know that there is wire trouble and that there has been a great sleet storm, with many hundred linemen imported by the telegraph, telephone, and power and light companies. There is a business activity that has seldom been equaled around the first of the year. The various corporations, like the Western Union, have opened a checking account at the local banks and pay off their men with checks. 75 years ago, January 3, 1950, John C. Hundman, Hundman, took office as executive of the Corn Belt Council of Boy Scouts in Bloomington today. Harry Dowell, executive for 9 years, was to turn over the duties to Hundman in a private ceremony. At 4 p.m., Hundman previously served as executive of the Joliet Council of Boy Scouts. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph, January 3, 2025. Please stay tuned.